brothers, both Kirk and Scott, expecting Larry before long. And we're going to actually backtrack, I bet, today in our last segment of observations. We focused on what Shamuel means he listens to God, had to say in a conversation with Yahweh about the people's desire to have a government like other nations. And we were just beginning to consider what God had to say about human governments. But what I noticed is that there really is a very important discussion that takes place before this. And it is just God's nature. God very seldom issues a warning without first having provided a solution. You know, he will first tell us, this is what is in your interest. If you do these things, this will be the beneficial outcome. And then he says, you know, but if you choose another option, for example, human government over a relationship with him, he then tells you what you should expect from that government. So I wanted to turn back the pages of our review to what takes place really in the previous chapter of Samuel. And I thought that the best way to set that up would be to expose one of the most glaring contradictions in the book that Christians lug around that they have labeled the Bible. Now, I use the term they have labeled because Bible is at best based upon the Greek / Phoenician / Egyptian word Byblos. And Byblos is a town that was named after the Egyptian god Biblia. But there is actually a Hebrew root for Bible. It's Babel. And Babel means with the Lord, with Baal. Baal is the Lord, the chief deity of Babylon, which in Yeshayah we learn is Satan himself. So Bible means with Satan.
Wow.
And if you look at the actual meaning of the Hebrew word Babel, it means to confuse.
Okay.
So we use the term Bible only to expose and condemn the name that Christians have given to their book. But within that book, it is absolutely filled with contradictions. The first 80% of the book is an absolute and complete, irrefutable conflict with the last quarter. What Christians have done to create an Old and a New Testament, neither of which is appropriate. They are in wholesale conflict with each other, total and complete contradictions. I don't think there is a more glaring conflict than the one that Paul authors in his New Testament, where he tells us that we should surrender and submit to government, and that all governments are there for good, and that God has appointed the leaders of every government. So, since Paul's view on government is the antithesis of God's presentation and acrimony towards government, I thought it might be interesting for us first to begin this review by citing what the most despicable man who ever lived, the man that Yahweh calls the plague of death, wrote in the 13th chapter of a book that he penned on behalf of all people, the Romans. What did he have to say, Kirk?
Well, let's see here. The most confusing man in the world, speaking of confusing, he says, let every person be in subjugation to the governing authorities. For there is no authority except from God, and those which exist are established by God. Number one, he says, therefore, He who resists authority has opposed the ordinances of God, and they who have opposed will receive condemnation upon themselves. For rulers are not a cause of fear for good behavior, but for evil. Do you want to have no fear or authority?
No fear of authority.
Yes.
Do you want to have no fear of authority?
No fear of authority. I'm sorry. Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For it is a minister of God to you for good. But if you do what is evil, be afraid, for it does not bear the sword for nothing. For it is a minister of God, an avenger, who brings wrath upon the one who practices evil. Wherefore, it is necessary to be in subjugation. It's hard not to make comments on these things. Not only.
Yeah, I'm having you read it because I got the willies just in writing it. even though I chose here to just look it up in a standard translation because I really am so repulsed by Paul, the whole thought of going to his original Greek and then trying to render it from the Greek to me is nauseating. So I'm just going to write it from down from an existing translation, and even the process of doing it, I want to puke. So I am, as the host of this show, I am asking my good friend Kirk to read this morning.
Let me wallow in it, okay?
Yeah, because I don't think I could read it without commenting and condemning every point.
Yeah, so but we're almost through it. So,
okay.
Wherefore is it necessary to be in subjugation, not only because of wrath, but also for conscience' sake? For because of this, you also pay taxes. For rulers are servants of God, devoting themselves to this very thing. Render to all what is due them, tax to whom tax is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. Romans 13:1-7. Ooh, a lot of material there.
Ooh, calling Paul's poison pen preposterous is being way too generous. His statement, this particular statement, may be among the most insane propositions ever attributed to God. It presents all governments as good when both history and current events affirm an entirely different reality. Considering what Rome did to its Judean province in 70 CE and again in 133 CE, one would have thought that this insane man's letter to the Romans, which in actuality is the cornerstone of Pauline Christianity, would have been tossed aside as a preposterous hoax. But unfortunately, in matters of religion, only one in a million believers think. You know, as I examine this, I'm not surprised that Paul wrote at the end of his earthly existence. He, of course, lives on now in a place known as Sheol, which bears his name. Sheol and Shaul from the same Hebrew root. It means to question. In the case of Shaul, question him. In the case of Sheol, the place of questioning. It is the abyss. It's what Christians would call hell. It is the it's akin to a black hole where those who have led others astray are incarcerated for all time. That when Paul wrote this, shortly after Paul wrote this, he claimed to be, falsely I think, a prisoner of the Romans. He wasn't in any Roman prison, but he claims he was under house arrest. I think he was just quivering in fear. And he wrote his one love interest in the world, Timothy, that everyone had abandoned him, that he had no one anymore, no followers, no friends, no supporters, that he was all alone. And that's not surprising. But what is somewhat surprising is that by 400 CE, this is after Marcion had collected and distributed Paul's letters and created a New Testament based upon Paul's letters and a highly edited version of Luke. Luke served as Paul's attaché. And he distributed those to create a new Gnostic religion. And then later, we find the Roman Catholic Church embracing all of this, particularly embracing Pauline doctrine, and imposing the Christian religion, Pauline Christianity. But between the time that Paul was rejected by all who knew him, and the time that Theodosius, in 400 CE, imposed Christianity as the as a integration of religion and politics in imperial Rome, what we find is that Rome was more savage than any nation that had ever existed, and that their savagery wasn't broad-based at that time. It was focused on the Judean province. Mm-hmm. It was focused on Israel. It was focused on the very thing that God loves. And so Paul wrote that all governments, in a letter that was written specifically to and of the Roman government, was authorized by God and only wielded the sword for good, and that you should be subjected to them. And yet this was the very same government that not only killed the body of Yosha, subjecting it to their most gruesome torture, the Romans that did that, not the Jews.
Mm-hmm.
And that this is the nation that shortly thereafter tore down Yahweh's temple. And that they used the booty that they had looted from it and the slaves that they had conquered around it to build the most decadent arena in all of human history, the Roman Colosseum.
Mm-hmm.
The most perverse arena, a place where death was celebrated. And then, to make matters worse, in 133 CE, the Romans came back and they separated all Yehudim from Yisrael. They renamed Yisrael after the Philistines. They salted the ground. They destroyed the towns. They murdered hundreds of thousands of the chosen people. And this is the very government that Paul wants you to believe is an implement of God for good.
Right.
If that's true, then their God is the most vicious, the most incomprehensible, the most duplicitous and repulsive deity ever conceived by man.
It would be comparable to Allah. If
yeah.
that were, because it would be more treacherous.
Even more treacherous than Allah. Yeah, exactly. And so, having written this, you would think that people would think would have come to the conclusion that rather than canonizing his 13 letters so that they comprise half of the Christian New Testament, that they would say this is the most preposterous, the most insane group of letters ever conceived by man.
It should have been
and
have rejected
it. Yeah. Now, when we compare Paul's tribute to Roman authority, to what God revealed to Daniel, we are confronted by one of the most cathartic conflicts in the whole of the Christian Bible. Yahweh told his prophet Daniel that this very same Roman government was an ungodly beast, that it was demonic and vicious. He then revealed that the governmental authority which would grow out of imperial Rome via a lowly and little horn,
mm-hmm.
which is the Roman Catholic Church based on Pauline doctrine, would be far worse. He said that the beast that would grow out of Rome, the governmental authority, which is the Roman Catholic Church, that would grow out of Rome, was the most counterproductive and vicious regime in human history. One which would be dreadful and terrifying, to use God's words, predicting it that it would crush and devour the world. Does that sound like something that an entity that only uses the sword for good? Does that sound like something that, that God has authorized and appointed?
He would never. It's impossible. It's a total impossibility. Or else it's a contradiction to everything he ever said.
Correct. In fact,
he didn't even ask you to fear him.
Of course. Yeah, in fact, rather than support Paul's position on government generally, and Rome specifically, God predicted that the Romans, through their empire and church, would have the single greatest negative influence on his creation.
And they've had tremendous influence on every culture, every
correct
government.
Yep. It would be out of Rome's influence, according to God, that the Torahless one, known to Christians as the Antichrist, would emerge. No empire in human history wielded its sword more often or more commonly for evil intent.
Suspicious.
By the way, which nation today has a Senate?
Oh, well, I think it's the United States.
Yeah, I think so.
I think we're sitting in it.
It's been snowed. It's snowed pretty good this week.
Yeah. Indeed. So while the revelations found in Daniel are the antithesis of those promoted in favor of Roman authority by the man born as Shaul, this was far from Yahweh's initial or most comprehensive condemnation of government. As we have learned in our last two Shabbat programs on Blog Talk Radio, the first time that Yahweh assailed human governance is found in the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, early in the first book of the Torah, in Bereshith. When is that, Kirk?
Well, the first one he assails, of course, is Babylon, and then he assails...
Nope, even before Babylon. First book of the Torah, early in, that Yahweh is found not only condemning human governance, but eradicating it. Noah.
No, of course.
Yeah. Most people have been led to believe that the story of Noah is that that people weren't being religious. They were being ignoring God, and that, you know, God is a jealous God, wanted them to worship him, and they weren't worshiping him the way that he wanted. So he had a tizzy fit and created the flood.
Right.
It's not what it says. There isn't a single reference to the people's relationship with God. And the fact is, all of the references shows that the people that he eliminated were overtly religious.
Mm-hmm.
He says the reason that he wished that he had not created humankind was that human governance, man's tendency to perpetrate influence over his fellow man, was universally vicious, was demeaning, was counterproductive. Yeah, it wasn't our relationship with God that caused God to extricate.
No, he didn't have one with them, mostly.
Yeah, he had none with them. It was their dealings with their fellow man.
Mm-hmm. And everything
was harsh.
Them.
Right, right.
He killed everything.
Yep, so that is the reason. The first condemnation of governmental influence is found in the story of Noah, which precipitated the flood. That's the reason for it.
If it had not been those sequence of events, it would have spread to the point there'd been nothing left.
Right.
In the one little major civilization there.
Correct.
And it would have been everything would have been aborted.
It was man's cruelty and viciousness against his fellow man that necessitated the flood. It was not mankind's lack of a relationship with God that caused him to reset humanity, but instead man's viciousness towards his fellow man. Now, the most complete criticism of government, and indeed some of the most revealing testimony ever presented to humankind, occurs in 1 Samuel, immediately after the Israelites requested a king to rule over them. And this astute prognosis is particularly pertinent in this case because the man that the nation had chosen over Yahweh, what was his name?
Shaul.
Shaul. Which makes God's revelation both historic and prophetic.
Yeah. Very pointed.
Because Shaul is the given name of the author of half of the Christian New Testament. Now, as we pick up the story of the despised Philistines, they had just returned the Ark of Yahweh, which we know as the Ark of the Covenant. What follows is one of the most amazing, revealing, and pertinent statements found anywhere in Yahweh's witness. And we're going to attempt to do it justice. As a matter of fact, we're going to cover this in, as a whole, and then in segments, and then we're going to drill down deep to overturn every stone so that we see what lies beneath the names of the two villains in this statement. One is Astarte, the other is Philistine.
Can I say one quick thing about Samuel?
Mm-hmm.
When you start to look it up in most of the Christian lexicons, dictionaries, they'll say Samuel is name of God because they do it as Shem instead of Shema. And it doesn't take very long before you look it up to enough places, and it's not. And I don't know that's a big deal, but just to make the point that if someone is reading some of your translations, that if you go to check them, you know, and you find something in a normal like American Standard or in any of the others that translate it, they'll say name of God or God's name. You know, for his understanding of who he is, and it's not. He listens to God. It's shamar.
Yeah, it is. It's based upon the verb shamar.
So when you go to those translations.
And by the way, there are very few names that Yahweh provides through his Torah, prophets, and Psalms that are based on two nouns. Name Shem is a noun. L
and no action.
L is a noun.
Mm-hmm.
L is not God's name. It is one of God's titles.
Right.
And so there is no action. Yeah, there's no action. You know, if you look at the names that Yahweh likes to use, they're verbs in conjunction typically with his name or title. Mm-hmm. And so these verbs are what communicates the action that's associated with the name. And in this particular case, Shamuel is, he listens. Shamu means he listens. It's from Shama.
Right.
He listens to God.
Yeah. The only reason I want to make that point is because if you don't look hard, you'll get the same garbage that they give you at most of these Christian sites.
Yeah. Well, just even think about it though for a moment. Let's just say that Sham was name. Yeah, and Shm is name. But let's just say that Shem was name, and Ol was of God. If that's the case, what is the name of God?
Well, it'd have to be El then.
Yeah, and by the way,
this is my name.
Yeah, and was Shamuel named God?
No, hardly.
Hardly.
Third, I mean, when you first see it, you go, what?
What does Shamuel say 100% of the time when he is speaking to or speaking for God? Does he say that I'm speaking for El?
No.
No, he says, I'm speaking for
Yahweh.
So, I don't have any problem with name. The reality is that Shama means to listen.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the impact of it. He's the guy who listens to. Why don't you?
All right. Yeah, and what do you find him doing? I mean, in this story, throughout this story, the thing that makes what Shamuel has to say meaningful is that he's constantly going to and listening to God and then sharing what Yahweh has to say to the people.
Mm-hmm.
The whole of the activity books of Samuel mm-hmm. are based upon him doing what his name depicts. So, I mean, I'd rest my case on that.
Yeah. Well, I didn't mean to jump in there, but that's... When you start translating a little bit, you can run across these things and you say, these people are nuts.
Yeah, they're crazy. Yeah, it's crazy.
Confusion again. I think
right.
we covered that the first stage.
Yeah, I'm not even... I don't think there's any place, by the way, where Samuel announces the name of God as some profound insight that the people were unaware of.
Yeah.
He constantly uses the name Yahweh. He constantly addresses Yahweh. He speaks on behalf of Yahweh. But he's not a fellow that is pretending to introduce Yahweh to the people.
No, it's not a great revelation to them. They already know his name is Yahweh.
Yeah, they know that Samuel is listening to Yahweh. They know that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's. I'll have you read this, Kirk, if you don't mind. Read. It's just this is considered. Yeah, this is considered one verse. Now, understand that there are no verses.
No.
And the man-made. Original text, these are man-made divisions, but this is considered one verse. It's from 1 Samuel, listen to God, 7:3.
Okay. So now Samuel consistently spoke to the entire house of Israel for the purpose of drawing near by saying, if with all your heart you return to Yahweh, choosing to turn away from and removing accordingly the foreign, pagan, and worthless gods from among you, and in addition, the Ashtar, the Queen of Heaven, the Mother of God, and the Virgin, the Child. Wow. And also choose to firmly fashion through unwavering preparation and confident determination your heart from Yahweh, and work with Him, serving with Him, while approaching Him exclusively, which is important, then He will deliver you. He will deliver you out of the hand and influence of the Philistine, the foreign foes who invade the Promised Land, invoking fear while separating and terrorizing.
Indeed.
Well,
now let's look at this a bit more closely.
Well, mm-hmm.
It begins with now, Wah, in addition. So now, Samuel. He listens to God. It is a compound of shama, to hear, to pay attention to perceive, and to understand. El, God Almighty. And then it's and what's important there is the reason that Samuel had something valuable to say is because he said what God had revealed. You know, if you and I convey Yahweh's testimony, we're going to be worth listening to.
Yes.
So now Samuel consistently spoke to. This is Amar El, actually promised and habitually declared on behalf of Almighty God, cognizant of the unfolding and ongoing consequence throughout time, always claiming and genuinely professing to the entire house. Now, boy, that's a considerable amount of amplification. But to get that application, not only from the additional meanings that are associated with Amar, to promise, to declare, to speak, to communicate, but also because of the stems. There's two stems. The stem here is the call stem. It tells us that you need to review what is being said literally.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than look for nuances, that this should be interpreted as something that is actual and can be depended upon and genuine. And then it's in the imperfect conjugation. Now, the imperfect conjugation, very unique, well, it's very common in Hebrew, but it conveys a unique concept to those of us who are in languages that are not as relationship influenced as is Hebrew. It's a concept that is difficult for those whose mind works in English, where there is a past, present, and future tense.
Right.
Because in Hebrew, there is no past, present, and future tense. Yeah. There's only ongoing behaviors
or
completed behaviors. Yeah. That's all there are. And the completed behaviors doesn't reference time. It could be completed in the future.
Yes.
It could be a one-time event in the present. Or an event that was done and ended in the past. We'll return to observations after this break.